Okay. I want to welcome all of you to the annual membership meeting of the Lincoln Pond Association. I'm Jerry Zahavi, president of the Lincoln Pond Association. And we're going to begin, I'll just give you an overview of how we're going to run the meeting. Basically, we'll do introductions, not too long. Introduce yourself to your camp, then we'll do the minutes from last year, treasurer's report, and then Maggie Bartley will be giving, where are you? Yes, we'll be presenting a little bit of history about Lincoln Pond. She promised to do this last year, and she's coming back to do this. We put her up front because she has another meeting to attend to, another obligation.
The county fair, I'll be selling bacon burgers.
Then we'll talk a little bit about lake quality and sea slap, various reports from Wayne. Then the Kingdom Dam update. We got the most recent update 2 days ago. Unfortunately, they were not able to send a representative. Tom Lincoln had a family obligation today, so he couldn't come up. But he did send a report, an updated report. Then elections. We have elections secretary, Debbie, is running. I am running for re-election. And then two directors, April and Wayne. April couldn't make it today. And Judy Schwartz couldn't make it. They're both directors. Then a little bit on broadband access, the current status of that. A few odds and ends. The garage sale report. Road conditions, membership, t-shirts, and any announcements and new business. So that's what we're going to do. And so let's get going with introductions. I've already introduced myself. Let's begin.
Wayne Johnson from Lower Pond Way.
Laura Garrison, Lower Pond Way.
Jerry Bart, 128 Twin Brooks.
Matt Probst, the old sleeper place, first house on the left as you turn out of Lower Pond Way.
Kathy Probst.
Jan Trupalak, 198 Lower Pond.
Barbara Trupalak, 98.
Dennis Blackman, 7 Conus Way. Andrew Anderson, Twin Brooks.
Ivan Chaffman.
Yes. I'm Jeff Sankowitz. I'm also here. I'm gonna let the dog put the dog in the cage because he's scratching my door.
Oh, right. Okay.
Bill Anderson, Twin Brooks.
Oh, Mark Conley, Laura.
R.J. Potter, 4250 Lincoln Pond Road.
Betty Francois, the Myers Camp, the oldest camp on the pond, 80 years this year.
Yay!
Great. Maggie Bartley, Council President.
Sue Johnson, Lower Pond.
Andy Dougal, Scoundrel also.
Debbie Metzel, Secretary, I'm up on the Campanjo.
And
I'm Dave Jones, 35 Lower Pond. The numbering here is not.
Yeah.
Well, welcome, and thank you. That must be. We're going to do the minutes and quickly get through that. So, Debbie?
Okay, I'll just read them or sort of summarize it quickly, and then hopefully they are posted online, so if you want to read it more carefully, but most of you are here. This year we had introductions, although we started at 10:15. People can maybe give us feedback at the end of this meeting if this is a little better to start a little earlier. The minutes were approved. Jeff did the treasurer's report, and I think at the time we had around 1,700, and that report is also up. And he reported that 26 camps belonged at that time, and more people signed up at the meeting, so it's been running somewhere between 30 and 33 camps, and we would like to increase that. Then we went to Wayne Johnson with the lake quality, and he reported that we were rotating out of East Flat, which we'll hear more about later on for last year, but we're back in this year. That report is always put on the website, so you can read the different things they're finding about the lake. Then the New York State FOLA meeting discusses issues with the weeds, and that's certainly our biggest concern here. He also reported, though, that many other lakes are surprisingly worse. And also just ours is large, which makes it harder to treat. And then there was discussion about all of that. He mentioned that the state tests for E. coli, so if there was a problem, we would hear about it because they would be closing over there. And so that gives us some extra information. And then there was much talk about the causeway, but not a whole lot of fact. And we're waiting for the engineer report to see what they're going to be doing. And then, you know, can discuss further whether the association has a position on that. Some want it higher, wider, red, whatever, but there wasn't anything close to a consensus and there wasn't a lot of information. Then Jerry went over the Kingdom Dam project, which he was announcing last year that the dam is being funded. It's a two-year process, but now it's probably more than that because they're a little behind schedule. The engineers had begun testing and they were supposed to be finishing last summer, but that didn't happen. We have the names Tom Miller, who's the bureau chief. He's in charge of design and construction, and Tom Lincoln, who's at dam safety and also on the liaison to DC. And they had really nothing more to report until they had finished their research. We also talked about being knowledgeable about this, so if the lake is lowered, and we maybe would take advantage of using that time frame if they're weak or whatever. So we'll definitely keep on top of that. And as we know more, it will be on the website, and we'll probably call another meeting. We then talked about road conditions and just the tremendous work that was done both by residents on the private roads, Wayne especially at his end, and Ellsworth at the Twin Brooks, and just all the work that went in to fix the mess that the hurricane seems like a century ago, but it was really just so we got a pretty good report, and also DEC did the road below the dam, and that was in a minute. Then Margaret made a presentation and talked about more about the lower road, and again suggested we deal with the North Pond and the pond as low as possible. Invited everyone to board meetings and ways of meetings, committee meetings. We talked about possibly putting a link to our website on the town website. And also there was a suggestion that there be a link there to the state campsite, because many of us do get phone calls about the pond and people wanting to stay. She also shared that there was a map under glass in the town hall that shows the pond around the time, I think it was right after the Civil War. And she shared with us that there was a hotel on the upper pond run by a Mr. Lincoln, which was how the lake got its name, and I think most of us had always assumed it was related to Abe Lincoln. So that was very interesting, and we asked her to come back, and she's here. We passed revisions of the bylaws. One was changing the fiscal year to end December 31st, and one was to say 10 households of the association present would count as a quorum, and the other was to allow future amendments to be done in a one-year process by saying if there were any, it would be posted on the website and a mailing to those or email to members stating what the amendment was at least a month prior to the meeting, and then we could vote at that year's meeting rather than voting for the two-year process. We had elections, and Jeff, Laura Garrison, and Judy Sports were re-elected. There was people were suggesting under announcements that if you had a vote that didn't need to be registered, you might want to put your name on it so that in case we had another event like Irene, things would be easier to get back to their owners. There were canoes, but you didn't know you might spot one, but who would you bring it back to, and so on. And also suggestions to put it on your dock in case that floated away, too. Maybe we spent hours looking for us. This is to our own. Wildlife reports, there were bear sightings, bald eagles. People talked about wolf spiders. The fishing tournament, there was a 4-pound bass that was the winner, and somebody else reported a 5-pound bass. And also, people were noting that the tournament didn't seem to be hurting the fishing, because that had been a question people had. But people were doing all right afterwards, and last year, 4 moons were spotted on the lake. Judy made a report on the t-shirts. Most of them were sold out. She asked if people were interested in sweatshirts, hats, maybe wine glasses, mugs, or anything, and if they were to talk to her, if they were. And then we also talked about whether we wanted to sell it to members, non-members, at different prices, but there was no resolution of that. New business people were encouraged to take part in the town's comprehensive plan information gathering, and we're giving information how to do that. We talked a little more about the internet issues here, and Doug and Jerry agreed to do some work on that, and he'll report later on that. There was a talk about having a box by the mailboxes to put packages so people didn't always have to go into town when they, you know, we could share a key, but that hasn't come to pass, but I think there was some interest on that. And then the speeding on the Lincoln Pond Road was talked about, and we were going to pursue possibly getting a portable speed sentry for the summer season. And then a thank you went out to all those that helped with the road cleanup. The meeting ended at 12:15.
I need a motion.
Any
motion to
questions,
accept.
Corrections?
I make a motion to pass the minute.
Okay, all those in favor? Opposed? Okay.
And I have, if people want to call because they don't get online, they're here. Yeah. You can get one there.
Okay. Yep, now we'll give us our treasurer's report. And I forgot, Debbie, I apologize. I should have brought you to the front.
Well, I'll be short. Well, thank you. So I'm the treasurer. I've been the treasurer for a few years. And our dues are, that's about the only thing I really do is send out due solicitations. And I try to keep an updated membership list or property owners list, whatever you want to call it. This is a little different than last year because we changed the fiscal year. As of June 30th, if my math is correct, we have $2,886.22 on hand as of the end of the fiscal year, which was December 31st, we had $2,580.60 on hand, having bumped up from $1,793 the year before. A couple things drove that. Number one, there's two things that have been positive in the recent past in terms of the money that we have. One is, the town has contributed 50% of our expense to CSLAP. I think that's $450, and when we paid it for the last 2 years or 3 years, they've given us back half of that, $225, I believe. The second is the t-shirt sales that Judy initiated. Not that it was terribly profitable, but it was profitable. And I think over the two-year period, the last two fiscal years, probably the profit was about $600, I'm thinking. I may be off on that. But that also has helped. And then the third thing I think that has helped was last year, we were rotated out of the CSLAP program. So the... That's $450. So that expense was not incurred last year. We're back in it this year. But in any event, I mean, from when I started, we're in pretty good shape. This year, I think I've got about four checks this morning. But as of the 31st of July, a couple days ago, we had 28 camps to pay. So now I'm going to say we're at 32. I sort of try to monitor that, and I have that on the second page of the report. Last year we had 39 camps that had paid. Some people pay a little more. Some people will send in $20, $25. I'm not doing refunds. I'm not sure how many camps there are on the pond, but I'd like to get that number to 100%. I don't want to embarrass anybody, so don't take this in the, I'm not trying to single anybody out. But when I send out the email notices, I have everyone's email address, and I send out. I type it in wrong, and it comes back. And some of you get a broadcast email, some of you get a single email, with just you on the as the addressee. But and then I try to figure out what your email address really is. But and then I also try to send out for some people that don't have email. I try to send out the same thing in hard copy in a letter form. And I enjoy getting the responses, and so I'm gonna just read a couple to you. They're not funny. They're just enjoyable. So they call me Mr. Sinkowitz. That's you know, my grandfather was Mr. Sinkowitz, I guess. So this came. And again, the representative of the camp is here, so I don't take this the wrong way. I just got this, and I was fascinated by it. I received this email from my second cousin, Susan Babichola. It was my email. I wanted to support the association in ways that I can from Michigan. I've only been to the Myers cabin once in my life and doubt that I have any legal right to, but I love the Myers legacy and hope it continues to provide happiness to all that enjoy it. I am the granddaughter of Ralph Myers and daughter of Robert Myers. You may contact me, and she gives her address. Please let me know if I can do anything. Sincerely, Geraldine Myers, Mazza. And I said to myself, well, this is wonderful. She sent $15. She sent in the membership fee for the camp. And I said, my God, the lady's in Michigan. She's been here once, and she's sending me. That's great. I was then hoping the rest of the family would send money. Yeah. So that was fun. And then this one, I don't think this gentleman's here, Mr. Hauser. Okay, so I got this note, and hi Jeff. My wife Kathleen and I purchased Lot 6 from Mitch Kaufman last fall. I've been up to Lincoln Pond every month since. We put up a tent with a wood-burning stove. So I spent lots of fun hours this past winter at Lincoln Pond. I am a 46er to look forward to meeting you. So I said, whoa, you know, that's pretty cool. He's living in a tent up here in the winter. And so 4th of July, I walked up to introduce myself, and he was gone. He and his wife were gone. And they unfortunately, I think they put their tent in, like, the wrong place. It was like a swamp. In any event, I walked up there, and sure enough, there's a tent, and he must have been in the mountains. I didn't meet him on the 4th of July weekend, and there's some other little notes and things that come in, and I never respond to them, but I do enjoy reading them. Somebody, maybe Jerry can explain this to me. This again came from the Myers camp, Cheryl Myers. I guess. She wanted to see if is there a separate smartphone address that one would have if I wanted to email somebody on their smartphone? How does that work?
I don't use phones.
Oh, okay. All right. The
smartphone should just be a regular email.
Okay, she said, did not see email. Form when using my smartphone. She couldn't get the
translated.
Form. Oh,
okay. Right. Yeah. Sometimes you can't open the,
In any event, keep paying your dues. I always raise them, and I get voted down by the board of directors. at the moment, we're in good shape. I put a budget in, a proposed expenditures for this year. We are going to have the CSLAP at $450. We are going to have the New York Federation of Lake Associations, which we have to be a member of to participate in CSLAP, for $35. I believe Jerry's domain name comes, the Lincoln Pond Association domain name comes up this year.
I have to receive it.
I put in $450, assuming that maybe next year we will redo the T-shirts. We have to shell out some cash to buy the shirts to resell. We've talked in the past about a brochure. I'm actually still trying to explore getting a box with where we can put, like, those real estate boxes that where they put the information about the real That's what I sort of put in for a budget. But we're in good shape.
Yeah.
I wish we were in better shape, but we're in good shape.
Well, just 2 years ago, we were talking about increasing our duties, so we are in good shape. Okay, thank you very much. And now it is time for Margaret Barclay to come up wearing her historian's hat. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, I think I just got a piece of information that's helpful because we have to start working on our 2014 budget. And if you're going to be in CSLAP this time,
we are.
2014.
Yeah.
I will put it on there to be in. Now, I still have to convince 4 more people.
Well,
it's not up to me.
Tell Jerry to show up for the meeting. He'll break their arm.
Okay.
Well, I send a letter every year.
No, but we are.
But we have to. We have to do it. We have to plan on it now for 2014.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Hearing this, I'll put it in and see if it flies. And it's interesting because you were talking about Hurricane Irene, which was just about almost 2 years ago. It was
August
the end of August. August 28th. Yeah, so we're coming up on the second anniversary of that. And boy, you're right. Label the docks, label the canoes. I ended up with a full telephone pole in my yard from that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how heavy those are.
Those are labeled by the utility company.
I didn't see the label. Anyway, I got a telephone pole for anybody's missing one. Anyway, nobody claimed it, so I guess it's salvage rights. Thinking about floods, I just wanted to update you all. You know that about a month ago we had another flood here. You all were probably pretty safe from it. I don't know if it affected you in any way here. On the night of Thursday, June 27th, I was at Deer's Head, and I get a call from the highway superintendent around dusk, dark. And he says, "We just lost Hurricane Mountain Lane." And I'm like, "Well, I know it's raining, but there was a cloudburst on Hurricane Mountain just on the E-Town side. 4.5 inches of rain fell in 30 minutes on the side of the mountain. Well, there's no streams up there. There's no bodies of water to hold it. It came down and took out 1¾ mile of Hurricane Lane. There were 3 families at the top of the lane who were fine, except they couldn't get out. It took us 4 days to get 1 width car wide in so they could get in and out. Meanwhile, the kids were whining that they were sick and tired of vegetarian chili. A lady called and said she was out of Diet Coke. Catastrophe. But it's like a 5-mile walk to get down just to Nyhan. So they really were stuck up there. Elizabethtown suffered in that particular flood, which didn't have a name because it wasn't a hurricane, over $300,000 worth of damage. And it was very isolated because when he told me that the mountain road, Hurricane Mountain Lane, had washed out. And I knew it had been raining hard because I'd seen this really dark cloud to the west. I jumped in my car to run down to New Russia because I know we have some really low spots along 9. The road was dry. The river was where it should be. It hadn't even rained. 4 miles apart, there was that difference. Then I called, I had to call a state of emergency. I called the emergency command center in Lewis, Donnie Jacklish. He says, "Declare your state of emergency. We'll do the paperwork tomorrow. We don't know what else is going to be washed out. There's another cell coming your way." And between 10 and dawn, it hit us again. Flooded Water Street. I know, Fran, did you see it when it was underwater? I mean, the water in the branch coming off Hurricane Mountain Lane, it was cresting over the bridge by Bob's Pizza. We evacuated the people in the apartments. We evacuated senior citizens, brought 4 ladies from senior housing up to the town hall. It was nuts. It was like, and it didn't happen in Lewis. Lewis didn't have any damage. So these things can be, you could get a storm in Lincoln Pond that doesn't touch E-Town.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really weird. And so anyway, I just want to kind of catch everybody else up because if you weren't right there, you didn't even know it happened. In the process, after I got invited to your meeting, I went through my computer, because of course I was a history teacher, and I started just printing off any of the newspaper articles I could find from the past about Lincoln Pond. So I kind of assembled them for you, for your association, for a little booklet. And then I found some old maps that I printed and some photos, which I think everybody will want to just, you know, I'll leave it with you all. And then in the future, if I find more, or if other people find more, you just keep adding to it. But
okay,
I thought
you could scan that in onto the website, so more.
Yeah, all of these are digital on my computer, so
okay.
I can just put them in a folder. Or maybe I'll just burn them on a disk because the pictures tend to be large,
and, then we'll post
and
it.
Just burn you a disk, and then you can upload it however you want.
That would be great.
So I thought I would just share a couple of little comments here from the past that kind of relate to things that are today. Last year I mentioned that the name Lincoln Pond came from Horace Lincoln, who owned the hotel at right across the causeway on this side. And it says here in the November 6, 1890, E-Town Post, the Lincoln Pond Hotel and Barns were consumed by fire yesterday. Most of the furniture was lost. It was insured for $800. Now, at that point, Horace Lincoln no longer owned it. It had been taken over by a man named Richard Christian. And it was sometimes referred to as the Christian Hotel, but that kind of gave it a bad name because people thought they couldn't get a drink. So Lincoln Pond Hotel became more popular name than the Christian Hotel. And then there's a really nice account here of, it's called A Week at Lincoln Pond, and I won't read you the whole thing, it's 2 pages. August 29th, 1901. So this is about 112 years ago. And just see if this sounds like your visits here. The pond, as you know it, is situated 6 miles from Elizabethtown on the Mineville Road and is a lovely body of water nearly surrounded by native forests. It is perhaps a mile and one half long and nearly as wide and abounds in fish such as bass, pickerel, bullheads, etc. It is fed by several brooks of sparkling spring water which are full of speckled trout. Our party of four, after a delightful ride over the mountain, landed at the Christian Hotel. And from there we took our outfit by boat to our camping place upon the eastern shore and about a half a mile from where we embarked. Upon a beautiful knoll several rods from the shore, we cleared away a place and pitched our tent and put up our cooking apparatus and were soon ready for business. The way he describes it, I think it's one of the state camping sites. It's kind of up on a little knoll there. I know I paddle past it whenever I canoe. After dinner, we started exploring and soon the brooks and the best fishing places located. Also some bass for supper, and at sundown, at the head of the pond, we rowed, and after anchoring, we proceeded to capture a fine lot of bullheads for breakfast. These guys are really healthy. They're eating fish. I don't know what else they eat.
Without mercury.
Yeah. Then, tired but happy, we rowed back to the camp and to bed, and how soundly we slept in our cozy tents under the starry skies, breathing the pure forest air no one could imagine except those who have had the pleasure of a similar place. So, other than the fact that I don't know if you eat bullhead for breakfast, and you get trout, is there still trout?
On the Black River.
I mean, there used to be a time when Boquette was full of trout and Roaring Brook. And
Boquette has, yeah.
Does it? Well, let me tell you, they dump them in at the bridge, different bridges, and as far as I know, they go right to Lake Champlain. Now, the other side of Lincoln Pond is, of course, the fact that, first of all, 100 years ago, there was only one pond. It was just the upper pond. And from there, it went down. It was the Black River, and it went to... The dam was built to create a hydroelectric power. I have an account here in 1909. A little after 4 o'clock Tuesday morning, April 20th, 1909, Hubert Marsh, one of the men employed at Daniel Payne's powerhouse on the Black River, just above the hamlet of Meggsville, which is no longer there. You don't know where Meggsville would be? If you go down the Kingdom Road from the dam, it's all woods. There used to be a town down there called Meggsville. Actually, you know, I have some pictures of that after the tour. Mr. Marsh held a haste. The hamlet of Meggsville discovered that a big storage dam at the Kingdom Settlement had given way. So that was the dam right here at the end of the pond. Mr. Marsh held a hasty consultation with himself and drew the conclusion that there would be something going wrong on the Black River. He at once telephoned down the river to Meggsville and Brainerd's Ford. What might be expected. Consequently, the people along the downstream from the upper plant were made aware of the impending danger. In a short time, the water began to rise, entering the house of Watson Sherman on the Elizabethtown side of the Black River at Meggsville. So he saw that the dam was giving away and called ahead and told people to get out. When I talked to the engineers here who were going to come work on this, they wanted a list of every occupant below the dam all the way to Route 9N. Where the Black River goes under Route 9N on the way westward, because they needed to know if the dam ever went, who's in the way. There are not as many people downstream as there used to be. So that was 1909, and the dam did break. dam near Elizabethtown goes out. Dwellings and powerhouse swept away by the flood. Damage in the thousands. As a result of Lincoln Pond Dam giving away, between 4 and 5 o'clock Tuesday morning, a flood of water 20 feet high swept down Black Brook, the outlet of the pond, to the Boquet River, causing damage to property in the many thousands of dollars. But fortunately, no lives were lost. They described the dam then as being a log dam in the center with concrete wings. So they had been building up the sides of the dam, you know, in anticipation that the logs are not going to hold. There are some photos in here of that log dam. Anyway, the center part went out. The log part, when they got too much water, that was the weakest spot. So they, in 1909, it went out, severely damaged the village of Megsbo, which never really recovered. And then they rebuilt the dam out of concrete. 3 years later, great volume of water overflows the Black River banks, wrecks the powerhouse and bridges. Thousands of tons of water were released and rushed down on Megsville when the Lincoln Pond Dam went out. So 3 years later, it was all concrete. Concrete went out. So, you know, it's interesting. We've had Hurricane Irene. We've had a recent flood. They had them 3 years apart, and the concrete dam didn't hold. So I'm not sure when that dam was built. Obviously later, and they've obviously been checking it. But 3 years, and they said here, this dam was only 3 years old when it went out. So things have happened like that, and the full accounts are in this. They also talk here about, I found an account where, I heard you talk about getting broadband here. I don't know how you function here in the summer.
We go to the library.
You got dial-up?
We go to the library.
We go to the library.
Yes, this meeting ground there.
Top of the hill. You can also sit in front of the town hall. We have guest wireless in the town hall. There's a picnic table next to the town hall down for the summer. Anyway, in 1941, they brought the first electric power. I found a little account of that, 1941.
To Lincoln Pond.
To Lincoln Pond. Here's an article here that says, the electric line has been run to Lincoln Pond, and people owning camps are wiring them. October 1941. So obviously, prior to that time, you were running on kerosene lamps, and you know everybody didn't get electricity. It took a while.
People want electricity.
Yeah, they still want electricity, right? So you know, I don't know how they're going to bring broadband in here. Anyway, there are accounts of things like that. Getting liquor licenses for the hotel here, because you know, sometimes you can get a liquor license. I don't know what the people from my mill did if they wanted to come over.
What was the hotel used for? I mean, was it a way station between Port Henry and Elizabethtown?
Yeah, and the fact that people came to stay and didn't have camps could just come for a few days.
Okay.
You know, fish and hike and hunt or whatever as a place to stay. But you'll notice in certain places throughout the Adirondacks, in the middle of nowhere, there'll be a restaurant or a hotel. Mm-hmm. One of them was here because it's a midpoint. The other is at the top of Spruce Hill when you go to Keene. You go up, and there's Baxter Mountain Tavern.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not really much else around it. They've always had a tavern or a hotel there, because by the time the horses, the stagecoach up, you got to the top, the horses needed watering, the driver needed watering, the passengers needed watering. Mm-hmm. And then once they got cars, you had to have some place to get oil and water and gas. So you have these midpoints. They're always on well-traveled roads between two areas, and this was one of them, crossing right here. So they've had a bridge there, where we would call it Causeway, for a long time, because it was just a bridge over the Black River. There wasn't a pond on this side, so it didn't need to be as big. And I'm sure it got washed out frequently, as wind bridges do. So I have in the back the articles, and in the front the photos. And there's some photos here of what they call the piping that went to the hydro plant out of the dam, and a picture of the hydro plant. And I know when I've gone down Kingdom Road, where they just fixed it, you could still see the pipes in the woods, leftover pieces, you know, from the power plant. And a picture of the wooden dam. There's a couple of pictures of that, yeah. I'll just pass this around so you can look at the pictures. There's a couple of old maps I copied there as well. So, I just thought, you know, you need to have a historian for your association.
I had a question. You mentioned about how we had flooding because of the hurricane and different problems. Something that was very frustrating to me is when we had the hurricane hit here, I have a portable radio with batteries. We could not get any information, any place, on any radio station to what was going on. We did not know. Holes were out, nothing. And I would think emergency services or whatever through the town, some way or other, there should be access to that information if we ever get hit with it.
We will get hit. First of all, the town, what happens here is the county runs all emergency services, 911. They have a command center at the Lewis, where the new Lewis jail is, and the state police at Exit 32. That's called the operations center, and all the communications for emergency systems come out of there. They had a problem because their power went out, and they had to go on the backup generator at one point. I wasn't in office then, so I'm not sure how it was coordinated during Irene. I know when Hurricane Sandy, we thought it was going to hit here. I was up at the emergency command center at Big Spring TV, and we were listening to the National Weather Service reports out of Burlington. That's where the weather information comes. I don't even know how you get radio signal down here. I can't get radio signal in my house.
Yeah, without a cell tower, we don't have cell service at the other end of the pond. And so you were a couple of days, and you were kind of blind as to what the situation was.
Get it from the lake.
You can get it from the lake.
Well,
yeah.
T-Mobile.
Oh, okay.
Did, have they put in the cell tower, though, for along the north way? Because last year we were told that the one stretch of the north way they had
between
gotten to was
30
stretch.
And 31, I don't think is covered.
Yeah. So then Verizon's going to, eventually when Verizon does that, those of us that don't get this signal probably will get that because we'll get it from the north way.
Now, I will tell you this because my husband's a techie guy and I'm not. He bought a antenna booster and it's in our house. And he was able to, and we have a little antenna on the roof of our house. He was able to pick up a signal from Vermont, AT&T signal, that bounces off of Cobble Hill, the rock sides of Cobble Hill. And the antenna on our roof was able to pick it up. So if you stand in our hall under this thing, you can get an AT&T signal. We use Verizon because we don't have AT&T. But anytime a relative comes to visit us, they go, oh, I can't get a signal on AT&T. Go stand under that spot. And you're picking it up from Vermont. I also have a booster in my car so that when I go up over Simon's Hill or whatever, whenever I go, you go up and down and you go in and out of cell signal. It can take one dot and boost it to three. And so I got this little thing on the roof of my car. So, I mean, that's what people I know who are just barely getting a signal as you try to put one of those boosters in your house.
Like Radio Shack of them carriers?
You order them online, yeah. I don't know if it was Radio Shack, but it was one of those, you know.
Several people at the end of Twin Brooks have those booster things they got at Best Buy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they work, and, you know, you still have to pay $50 a month to get the broadband air card thing,
right.
You know, to do broadband. But,
yeah, this was just...
But they work, and...
Yeah. And the cell signal on the cell phone, I mean, Verizon doesn't charge me anymore for having that booster. And then
right.
I can use my cell phone as a hotspot for my laptop.
Right.
And that's how I sometimes, when I can't get anything else, I can come. I mean, it's slow, but I can get off.
Yeah.
One of these days, it's going to be everywhere, like it is when you leave this area. It's just that this is a complaint. And we've talked about it at the county that... The value of property is directly related to whether you can get broadband or not. And people will come and say, I want to buy this house. Do you have broadband? No, forget it, I won't buy it. The value of that property goes down. The assessed value, the sale value goes down if you do not have access to broadband. Because people are working from home. So, you know.
Yeah. I'd like to answer your next question, but there's a place on Simmons Hill Road where there's a school bus.
Mm-hmm.
Parked out front,
mm-hmm.
There's a big sign mentioning the 13th
mm-hmm.
Amendment.
Yeah, which doesn't exist. No.
Yeah.
It's Article 13. There is no Article 13.
Well, it freed the slaves. Anyway.
No, Amendment 13 freed the slaves. I was a history teacher. Article 13 does not exist.
We
got it wrong.
Every time we go by there,
he's dead now. The guy who put it up is not alive anymore.
What was that place?
Belonged to a man who was... did not want to pay taxes
and
felt that the freeing of the slaves meant that you cannot be forced. This is how I was told. Freeing of the slaves means you cannot be forced to work against your will, which means when you have to pay taxes to the U.S. government, you're being forced to work against your will. So he would not register his vehicle. He would not pay taxes. That was his protest. So he passed away and left the property to a friend who I guess must be of similar. I just always want to go up and go, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not Article 13, it's Amendment 13. There's differences. But that's just, that was his former approach.
Did they pay taxes?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. I'm assuming they pay property taxes or they would have had their property seized and sold. He would not pay tax to register that school bus. And he would drive around with that plate, is what I heard.
What was his name?
I know the guy who owns it now is named Nichols, but I don't remember the fellow. It's been a number of years since he passed away, but, I mean, that's just what it was. He was, I don't know what the political party that is that just doesn't want to pay taxes.
Sovereign citizens. They're called sovereign citizens.
Yeah, yeah. So that working, being forced to work and turn your money that you've earned over as taxes is slavery. And that was my understanding of his.
This is completely off topic, but and you don't spend a lot of time on it. The state of the economy in Elizabethtown? Up, down, neutral?
No, I actually had a piece I know Betty saw.
Yeah, it was a great article.
A couple weeks ago about what's happened just by the numbers.
Yeah.
That we lost more people in between 2000 and 2010 in the census Elizabeth Town had the highest decline in population, 18%. Mm-hmm. And at the rate we're going, if we're now almost, we're coming up on 2014, so we're getting toward the midpoint of the next decade. The way I see it, I just keep telling you, that's not enough sex.
Yeah.
You all need to make children. We need young people. And everybody I tell that to says, I'm too old. And so I say, where are your children? Where are your grandchildren? And they go, not here. And that's what's happening is everybody, my children are here. My grandchildren are here. They're nearby, but they're not.
Well, broadband. Why were they?
Yeah.
Why would they come?
Right. Yeah.
So if you don't have enough population to sustain businesses, the only thing that's keeping Elizabeth Town alive right now is the fact that Monday through Friday, 600 to 700 people come in to work at the county, the school, the hospital, and the nursing home. That's keeping us afloat. That's keeping the Deer's Head open, Tops open, Kinney's open. If we didn't have that massive influx, we would be North Hudson. And I don't know if you know, North Hudson has 250 people. It's hard to sell homes, because as you want to downsize, as you get older, you want to go to a smaller, easier home. Betty and I understand that completely. We need young families. Who needs a four-bedroom house with a big porch? Somebody with kids. They're not here. They're not here because the jobs aren't here. We lost two businesses this spring on Water Street. Wilson's / Radio Shack left and went to Lake Placid, where it's doing a booming business because there's more people. There was a used furniture shop. That building's now empty. It's really hard to attract businesses. I was there a couple weeks ago, July 2nd, for the grand reopening of Tops, which took over from Grand Union, which had taken over.
Yeah, from Tops.
And I said they flew out the CEO or whatever of Tops from Buffalo. And as I was talking to him, I said, now, just, I want to warn you, in a normal suburban town area where you have a grocery store, people work during the day, but the stores are kind of slow. In the evening when they get off work, it gets really busy, and on weekends it's really busy. The reverse happens here. People come into E-Town, they'll buy their groceries on their lunch hour, it's very busy during the day, most seniors don't like to go out after dark. You get all your business Monday through Friday, Saturday and Sunday be dead. And they went, you went, what? And I'm like, yes, do not blame your manager. If your numbers are low on the weekends, there's nothing he can do about it. Yeah. The people aren't here. And secondly, starting in October to April, half the town goes to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So don't blame him if the numbers drop. Your peak season is right now, Monday through Friday in the fall. And he was going,
yeah.
It's just economically the reverse. So, short of just encouraging everybody to get busy and make more children, it's hurting our economy in terms of housing sales. We have a lot of houses for sale, and they're all big homes. If we don't have enough people to support the Deer's Head, the grocery store, and Kinney's, look at Westport. They don't have any space for Westport, except at the interstate.
We drive.
It's Lower Pond Way, a private road. Oh, yes. Yeah. You all own that.
the E-town. Way back.
Right down one road to Makesville.
Yeah, because that's I've snowmobiled it. I mean, I've snowmobiled. We come in from Westport, come up through Makesville Road, and then we get on the Kingdom Road and come all the way through. And I didn't know it was state lands. We
well,
come all the way up here.
The state bought a piece down there, and they closed the road off. I don't know what.
Somehow the snowmobiles get through.
Well, they just
go through it. Yeah.
Well, the state owns a piece. Where the horseshoe turn is up here, they own a piece there too, but they never did anything about trying to close that.
Right.
So I don't know why they.
I did some research on this area about 5 or 6 years ago. I have several books at home, which I spent like $75 for. One's called Pleasant Valley, which is the history of.
You got the reprint. Yeah. The original's supposed to be in your house.
Yeah.
I got through it.
Yeah. That dam has been there a long time, since 1825.
Well,
this was all iron ore mining. There were several, originally started in 1825 by a man by the name of Haas, H-A-A-A-S.
H A or H-A-A-Z.
Yeah.
He's buried in the New Russia Cemetery.
Is he? Yeah. And there's, I'm told there's still some caves over on the other side.
There's supposed to be mines, mines up in the hillside. I've never seen them. I've
Gates
heard them.
Also had mines up in there, and they hauled the iron ore down to the kingdom, and at one time there was 6 forges there.
It's on the map.
6 sawmills.
Yeah, what they did was they had a small dam, not the dam like we have now, because
It
didn't create a pond. You didn't have a lower pond.
Right.
But they had a dam that created fired the sawmill, and on that in that book I passed around, wherever it is, there's a map from 1858. And map from 1876, and it shows the iron forges right where the dam, alongside where the dam is. So yeah, you're right. They've been doing an industry. There's been an industrial thing going on there, and
all the land was cleared around here. This is all second generation.
Definitely.
Okay, they cleared tremendous amounts of land to get charcoal. It took something like 500 bushels of charcoal or something rather than make a. And it was a tremendous amount of wood.
And
this was all cleared all around.
All the trees were gone.
And they would haul iron ore from Fisher Hill all the way down the mountain. And where I'm at, just at the where the camp up on the hill, come down the mountain by the brook there, there was a watering trough for horses there that was there when I was a kid.
They had a number of those on hills.
But that was a stopping point to water the horses coming down the hill, but they hauled 4 or 5 miles down to the forges.
If you look on the pictures that I gave you in that book of the dam, there's not a tree around it. And that's what they did. They just stripped everything. There's no APA then.
And at one time, there was some 60 forges around Port Henry, and there's photographs of just stripped fields. All you can see is the railroad and maybe a couple of barns, just miles and miles of stripped timber that field.
Which is one reason why in 09 and in 12, when it rained heavily, there's nothing holding that water on those hillsides. It just, now that we have forest, it normally, it holds it back. But certainly when you get like we had in Hurricane Mountain, 4.5 inches in 30 minutes, which is equal to 9 inches in an hour. During Hurricane Irene, we had 10 inches in about 24 hours. And we did that. So you can see what 4.5 inches in 30 minutes can do. It's complete. Nothing can absorb that. So, is there climate change? I don't know. We had floods then, but like you said, the environment was different. With all these trees, at least they can soak up some of that moisture. So, anyway, enjoy your book. I'm
going
to go make bacon burgers.
Yes.
I'm
going to
the county fair this afternoon.
Have
a bacon burger.
Thank you so much.
Would you send me your website link so I can put it on the town website?
LincolnPond.org.
Is that all it is?
Can't get easier than that.
Okay. I'll send that off to our webmaster.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I'll just burn this whole
thing. Jody, you want to come in? It's a nice break. It's my niece, Jody.
From California to the
top. From the desert, where, what was it, 122 degrees?
22 degrees to this.
Thank you.
Lake reports. Wayne, get up here. You got to stand.
Yes.
I messed up earlier.
There's really not a whole lot different than what Debbie reported from last year. We are in the CSLAP system this year.
Could you tell me what that is?
Citizens Lake Association.
You're the one that deals with them.
Is that Association for
Lake?
Is that it?
Citizens.
Small Lake?
Small Lake Association.
Yes.
Citizens
Statewide Lake Association Program.
CSLAP.
And it's organized pretty much by the NYSFOLA, which is the New York State Federation of Lake Associations, which has, I don't know how many lakes as members, but there are currently 135 lakes that are doing CSLAP. And because there's so many lakes that want to do it, they can't afford to keep everybody in, so they rotate some lakes out every year. They just started that. Last year, and we were one of the first lakes to be rotated out. But then, you know, there's so many lakes that we'll be doing the sampling for a number of years before we get rotated out again. What I do is I go into the up pond, and we do one site, try to sit in the deepest spot, which I guess is the deepest spot, and looking at contour maps. Do a Secchi disc reading, which is a little black and white disc, you lower it down, you measure when you lose sight of it, drop it to the bottom, take a reading for what the depth is, bring it back up, take another reading, and see the disc again. And that tells you know how the clarity of the lake. And you know, in the spring when there's a lot of pollen, you see that it goes down, and now it's fairly clear. And then I do water sampling, but it's called a Kemmerer, that takes a water sample. I do a shallow test and a deep water test. And all the samples go to a lab, which is coordinated by the Department of Environmental Conservation. They measure the potassium and a number of other things. We look up the report on the website, and you can see all of the results. Hasn't changed a lot. And from what I understand, our lake isn't really conducive to supporting zebra mussels. Maybe one reason why we don't have zebra mussels, but
one thing
we're pretty good at supporting weeds, and we have lots of those. I did attend the conference. They have a conference every year. Usually it's in Madison, New York, which is central New York, near their headquarters. It's interesting, you know, they tell about all the other lakes and their conditions and how to control weeds. They have people come in, you know, that have all of the sonar, which is a chemical that can eliminate weeds. But generally, if you want to do a lake this size, it's just way too costly. It's too hard to do. But up till now, we've been doing pretty well. It's just that the weeds are starting to get old, I guess they're getting a little heavier and seem to be denser than they have been since we first came up here. Anybody have questions?
I have a friend who has a place on Grant Lake, and they've been actively, the Lake Association there has been actively involved in trying to combat the weeds, and they've been paying close attention to what's going on in Lake George. Down in Lake George, they've passed legislation where you can't bring a fishing boat into that lake now unless you have it inspected. They have people there all day long at the launches inspecting and then hot washing the boat, which will supposedly kill any vegetation that's still on the boat. And I think that that law is going to be applied throughout Warren County. My concern is that if the fishermen aren't able to get into those lakes, or if it costs them $50, which is what the fee is to get it hot washed.
Yeah.
If it's going to cost them $50 each time they want to wash their boat, they're going to start going to places like this that are a lot easier to come to without, they don't have to pay the $50. And I'm just a little, I know I'm a newcomer here, but I just want to let people be aware that be something that we need to take up the county, that if boats are not going there with their weeds, they're probably going to be coming here.
And I'm not sure there's a lot of new weeds that could be introduced. There is.
We got all we can get.
There is one. There is hydrilla, which, you know, it's been found in a couple of places. One in central New York near a section of the canal, which is a feeder to Ithaca, I think. And then over toward Buffalo. But
And Long Island.
But it's something that, you know, they're trying to make sure that it doesn't spread. They hit those areas pretty hard to try to control it. But otherwise, you know, we've got just about everything. And, you know, you try to keep the boats from bringing stuff in, but there's a number of lakes where they have stewards, and it costs a lake association roughly $5,000 a year to maintain a steward during the summer. And it's basically hiring a college student to come in, and they can get, you know, matching funds, but it still costs close to $5,000 just to have a steward. And all a steward can do is suggest that, you know, maybe they pick the weeds off before they could pull them off. They can't force them to do anything. They can just hand them a leaflet and make suggestions. You try to, you know, have a little bit of a one-on-one with them and try to be friendly enough so that maybe they would cooperate to get a chance to do anything.
Where's the island right there? When we, you know, for the last 10 years since we've been here, there was a pretty good milfoil growth between the causeway and the island. And it seems to have disappeared. There seems to be another weed that's killing the milfoil. It looks like a bale of hay.
Bladderwort.
What's the story? Is that invasive as well?
I'm not exactly sure if they call that an invasive or not. I don't see it ever discussed as being invasive, but it's pretty thick.
It is, yeah. I think if you were to go out there, you'd probably go out there. There's no milfoil there anymore. There seems to be all that other stuff.
It's changed quite a bit. There's areas now that, you know, you see the bladderwort, you don't see the milfoil, and then there's other places you still see milfoil.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how the cycles work, but things change, it seems, every other year. It's totally different. There is a milfoil moth that lays its eggs in the water, and the larvae go down, and they tend to eat the milfoil and cause it to fold over and die. And we see a number of these moths in June flying around, you know, at night, early or late evening. But I'm not sure if they've actually done much to control it.
Were they introduced? They were
at one time.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had a grant that paid for that.
It was a grant, and Anita Deming was pretty much involved in getting that initiated. And they put the moths in a couple of places, and they weren't having good success. And then one spot, they had a whole bucket full that they decided to just throw in all at once instead of spreading them out. They had the best success at that one spot. But
the trouble with them is they weren't surviving the winter, but it seemed like after that one they did.
And all the fish, weren't the fish eating the larva or something? There was something about the little bluegills were eating all of, in one stage.
The trash fish, the little ones, the sun.
But I don't know. I don't know if you could ever get enough milfoil moths to control milfoil. It is a big lake. You know, relatively speaking, it would be impossible for us to think about controlling the moths. Not at the prices we charge.
I think we have to work through DEC, maybe cultivate some kind of program, since half the lake is owned by them or managed by them.
I think if you could show that there was an income, like Lake George, you know, it's a pristine lake, it's huge, it's got camps all around, it does have a lot of state land, but predominantly it's private, and it has all of the hotels and motels, and they can bring in and generate, you know, millions of dollars to do this, and
they see problems, you know, and they see a problem in one little area, and it might be, you know, like just in front of Jeff's place here, and they send in the divers and come up with ways of controlling it. But, you know, they have the funds to do that, and they're generating more funds in order to be able to sort of maintain it.
Well, I mean, somebody mentioned $50. We took our boat down there a couple of years ago, and we had a one-day pass of like $15 to put, and I suspect that supports all that. All that, you have to put a tag on your boat, like it's like a registration.
Yeah, but now it's a new law they just passed this year that's stricter.
Even stricter than that.
Oh, yeah, $50 to have your boat put on the first time.
And I think they have a fund of $100,000 right now.
Yeah, they have their association. They have a lot of money there.
There is a new law that was passed, and that encompasses all of Essex County to it. So it's not just Warren; it's Warren and Essex.
How did Loon Lake get there? Loon Lake just did sonar in their lake, didn't they? Anybody know anybody on Loon Lake? They just did that in there. I wonder how they got it.
It certainly seems like we should watch and see if there's an influx. You know, we all have a sense of how many people are on the lake, and if you start to see that happening, that more people are coming up here, then that would be something, you know, try and deal with the town and the county and the DEC on.
I don't see that many more people watching at the site.
No, but this is just going into effect. So say, you know, the rest of this year or next year, if we start, you know, which is certainly something to watch out for. I think he's right that that could become a concern. You know, hopefully it would disperse and not just all head toward our lake.
I seem to see more boats here when you get a windy day, and I figure it's because they can't.
It's too windy for Champlain.
They can't boat on Champlain, so they come up here and they can go around on our lake and fish, you know, almost anywhere without having the waves like they did on Champlain. Thank you.
Was it decided that they may lower the level of the lake during the project here? Mm-hmm.
We'll go into that.
Yeah, that'll be part of the report.
Yeah. I think if you are harvesting any of the milk fund, make sure you get it by the roots and not just cut it. That won't be very effective. Okay, the Kingdom Dam update. So I've been in touch with Tom Lincoln, and as I said, he couldn't make it today, but he did send me a short note saying basically the information from April 30th, which is posted on the website. Have you all had a chance to look at that, the material on the website?
No.
Oh, then maybe I should just summarize it. I'll skip the beginning. The installation of steel anchors, this is the work will be done in 2014. That will be the fall of 2014. It will include the installation of steel anchors to tie the dam down to the existing bedrock. That's for an extra level of stability to better resist sliding and overturning. If the dam does get reclassified to be high hazard, they were not debating whether it was medium or high hazard. It must pass a bigger storm event. Therefore, the rock anchors allow the dam to meet the stability criteria set forth by NICE, New York State DEC's Division of Dam Safety. The upstream face will receive a new layer of concrete on top of the existing concrete. This will greatly reduce water seeping through the dam and extend the service life of the structure. The downstream face will have the concrete removed and may receive an overlay based on the amount of deterioration observed. Isolated areas of deteriorated concrete will be repaired as required. The concrete buttresses on the downstream face will be repaired or replaced as necessary. A cofferdam will be used upstream of the dam to minimize the necessary drawdown of the water while the upstream face of the dam is under construction. Now, he emphasized, or I emphasized, none of the possible modifications would involve altering the normal water level at all. So please let your members know that they will not be faced with the prospect of having boat docks high and dry. And the latest information I received from him, which is 2 days old, basically says that the earlier information from April remains valid, and the time frames for the plant were also valid. A surveyor, Prudent Engineering is the firm, will be on site and downstream in the coming weeks, that's this month and through September,
Letters were sent to the residents whose homes were identified as being near the stream. Did anybody receive any letters about this? Anybody near, no camps near them? A contractor dug a few test pits near the dam to verify the limits of the concrete wall compared to what is known, what is shown on the old drawings. Coring of the concrete wall is anticipated to happen at some point this month once the driller's other work is completed. Other than that, the future work at the site will be in the fall of 2014. So that's the latest information. Any questions? Or?
Yeah, I maybe misheard you. Did you say they're gonna reface the
both
sides
downstream? Yeah, with different refacings. But yeah.
Are they gonna are they gonna just do that with underwater concrete, or are they gonna put sheet in?
I don't know. But if you submit a question to me, he said basically just send any questions to him. He'll send responses, and we will post those responses on the website. So if you have any concerns, any questions, just leave them with me, and I'll convey them to the EC and Tom.
So what is the level of the lake that it's going to be at that time?
The level of the lake will be, oh, you mean what? Basically, the level, no, it's not going to drop.
No.
It's going to be minimal. No. Okay. The cofferdam will be tamed. So you don't have to worry about that.
Jerry, do we know what the final level is going to be?
No, I haven't gotten
we
it.
Don't have that information.
No.
They don't have it.
No, they're basically repairing the existing dam and anchoring it to prevent the shifting downstream that they've observed.
Are they still getting rid of the gates?
I don't know.
When
their
report is done, we'll get...
The plan originally was just a natural to spill over.
Yeah, that run of the river, we discussed that.
Yeah, run of the river.
Their proposal 2 years ago was to make the much wider spillway. Right now it's 30 feet or 50 feet, I don't remember. But they're proposing to make it the spillway, the full width of the dam, and then put a little V-notch in the top and not have the gate at all. once the water gets down to the V-notch, then there wouldn't be any water going down the river. So I'm not sure that they're thinking too well when it comes to that, but we'll see what happens. You know, and when it gets a little closer, then maybe we can have some discussions about exactly how they're going to control that.
They're going to, in the spring, next spring, they'll have all the detailed plans, and we're going to schedule a meeting. Or we'll be communicating to you about what the detailed plans will be.
I think if we really want to have any info, we probably should try to do something this.
I know.
Because
once
they get to the
detailed
plans, they don't make changes. You know, they're really hesitant to do any changes. So if we think that there's something that maybe they're not thinking about.
Well, submit your concerns. I'll send it straight down to Tom, and we'll get the responses.
See if I can do something.
You want me to, how about I send around a paper and people can just...
Either that or just email it, go to the website, email it to me. Either way, it's fine. Okay, any other concerns you have, just send it. Elections. Next. Basically, I'm up. Debbie's up. April... Spilling is up, and she couldn't be here today, and Wayne is up for re-election. Okay? Is anyone else interested in running for any of these positions? That's the president's, secretary, and two directors. Nobody is. Well, we all are.
I move we approve the slate of candidates.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. That's
you won.
The end of election.
Yeah. just
extend
their terms
indefinitely.
Yeah. That
would
include you.
Double salaries.
Yeah, doubling.
Double salaries.
Okay, next topic, broadband access on the pond. The status on that. Last October, Doug Spilling and I attended a conference at Clarkson, the Forever Wired Conference. That was in late September. And basically it showcased success stories in the Western Adirondacks. Most of the conference talked about all the great things that were happening in the Western Adirondack. And this incredibly high-speed
fiber optic connections they were getting there that competed with California Connect, you know, the tech communities in California. Unfortunately, they haven't gotten around to the eastern things yet. The problem that we have here is that we are between two belts. So Elizabethtown is connected, and the lake is connected, Lake Champlain, Fort Henry, and others. But we're right between them, and there's no reason for them to bring it here. A lot of the connections that came into E-Town and Fort Henry were because of, Elizabethtown, because of the hospital and those kind of services that required high-speed internet. So they were able to get the money and the funding and the supplemental grants to get that in place. We're in the middle of, we're between and betwixt, so we can't get that support. We have contacted a number of different companies who said it's not cost effective to bring it in here. You know, it would cost at least $300,000 to wire, and they're not going to be able to recover that money, especially since a lot of people are already get satellite internet, and for them, some of them might switch, some of them might not switch. So we're going to have to get some kind of supplemental incentive money from government for a private company to come in here. Some kind of grant. Now there was $25 million available last October. Right after the conference there was a deadline for New York State funds to support broadband development in underserved areas. And we did get ourselves written into one of the proposals. Unfortunately, this is from Mountain. It was called Mountain Wisp. Was the company that submitted a proposal. We were written into their proposal. Unfortunately, they were not funded. So we were unsuccessful in that attempt. And this came out of that conference. We're going to continue trying. All I can say is, you know, it's very frustrating to me because I'm year-round here and I rely on the internet a lot. And we just upgraded our broadband internet to a higher speed near DSL. It didn't cost us anymore, but there are two new satellites that came, one through Usenet and one through... we get it through Dish, Wild Blue, or Dishnet. And those new satellites give you higher speed connections, near DSL connections. But they're pricey. They're not like $29. We're paying $80 a month for the highest service. And that doesn't even match cable. It's limited. You're limited to 15 gigabytes during the daylight hours and another 15 between 2 and 8 in the morning. Can't watch videos or you'll use up your allotment. But we're going to continue looking and trying to, you know, I've written to Denny Little, I've written to Annie, all levels of government officials, including Maggie, and it's not been that effective to this point. We can't get the private companies to invest in this area.
I just want to say, if anybody really is interested in getting the dish and stuff, once you do your 2-year contract, you can always shut them off when they're gone for 6 months. We'll let you shut them off for 6 months, including the internet. Mm-hmm. We have DirecTV, and you shut them off when they're gone. You don't pay anything. And the same, Everglades have this up there. They have the internet. After 2 years, you can just shut them off. So you want to really want it.
Do you get internet off your dish?
I have heard it down here. If you up on the hill, yeah. they have a dish up there for we get ours from the dish. Yeah. And they can shut it off back after they take their 2-year contract. Now they can shut it off and they're gone. They can shut off for 6 months for about.
We shut ours off.
Yeah.
Dish.
Yeah, so.
We didn't bother with the 2-year contract.
We have a neighbor who has a dish at home in Boston Spire, and they bring their controller up and use it here when they're here. So, you know, if you have dish at home, you can arrange somehow to make it work up here too.
Yeah, and if you're within 1,000 feet of our house, you probably can piggyback on our wireless because I have a very powerful wireless signal going out.
But was it in front of your house now?
But don't use up our 50 megabytes!
Go to the library.
Yeah, go to the library or city. The fastest one is the city, is the town hall. So that's it for broadband. Any other questions or
Okay. We'll keep on working on it. Road cleanup, we had successful 2 days of road cleanup, the end of June and early July. Thank you for all those of you who participated. We did a follow-up quick cleanup around the causeway just because we thought right after July 4th there would be extra garbage, but there really wasn't that much extra garbage.
No, not many people put them off of the car.
No.
Jerry?
Yeah?
Wayne, do you want me to mention that we have those blue styrofoam things?
Yeah. In our canoeing around, we tend to pick up all the trash, and amongst that trash is a number of pieces of styrofoam, and that's foam that's in the box. And we have maybe 8 pieces, 3 feet long, that's a foot and a half wide. Somebody.
Ooh, floating dots.
Yeah. It's the dense blue stuff, so it's not the type that will break up like the white stuff that some people use.
Okay. Great. Let's see. Garage sale. We had a 50-50 garage sale sponsored by the association and the hospital auxiliary. 50-50 meaning 50% of the proceeds went to the hospital. And we didn't get a lot of people that day, but we did manage to send a modest check of $82.50 to the hospital from that garage. So it is something. For those of you, I don't know if we'll repeat it, but if you are interested in participating next year in any type of garage sale, a benefit garage sale, just let us know and we'll do it. Road conditions, Wayne, any? Or other people here, any reports on road conditions?
I spent all the money I had this year. We bought a number of loads of material, and I rented a tractor so that I could spread it. I didn't have one available for free, so I rented it for 3 days and managed to spread everything that was, pretty much everything that was brought in. I think the road is pretty stable right now. It has a few potholes, and you know, I just haven't been out filling potholes lately. But as far as the stability and able to withstand storms, it seems to be holding up pretty well.
Now, there were some issues that were raised last year related to roads, not necessarily the private roads. One was the guardrail issue, the collapsed guardrails here, and also the portable speed entry. Where do people stand on this? Are they?
I looked into the portable speed entry or speed
sentry. Yes.
Speed sentry, and the Essex County Sheriff's Department has 2. They run about. They're quite expensive. They're about the portable ones run around $7,000, and These stanchion ones they got as a grant, and they run about $4,000. So that's pretty much out of the question. But I did ask the sheriff's office to if we could get on that. There was a waiting list for this mobile sentry, and so we're buried somewhere.
But we're on the waiting list?
I supposedly we are.
Okay.
I also contacted both the state police and the sheriff's department to patrol this area, particularly in the summertime, with the speed zone. It's 35 miles an hour through the camp area, the residential camp area. But really, I'm finding 30. I did 35, and I found that to be a little bit heavy. Maybe 30 would be more like it. But on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday afternoon, is speeding 50, 60 miles an hour. It's constant, particularly the motorcycles.
Yeah.
And the sheriff's department has been out there several times this season already, and I've told them it's okay to park in my yard. And so they are monitoring. Maybe a call to the state police again. I call the state police, they put it on the email of all the cars, so if you have some spare time, for there's a term for it, traffic maintenance or global. I'm noticing a considerable better presence of the sheriff's department.
When I came in yesterday afternoon, there was a state trooper sitting up there.
Good.
Tucked off the side of the road.
Yeah.
So you can call them up, and then they'll leave. If somebody's, if you have a complaint that there's people speeding, you can call them up, they'll put it on there.
The way they communicate now, they don't use two-way radios. They get their email. It's all an email system.
That's why they don't control the air because they can't get it.
They put out a notice from the city of Boston. There's a terrible video of or something other.
We were here a couple weeks ago. I was with about six or eight sports cars, and we were driving around the county, and we were on the road between the lake road between Essex and Westport. And we're driving along, and I see a sheriff's car go the other way. And I said, "Whoa, you know." The guy that behind me had a radar detector. He said, "As soon as he saw your car, he turned the mobile radar on." I said, "Oh, how fast is I going?" He said, "You're only going 45, so I guess we're okay." But I think he saw the shiny car, and he said, "Check these guys out."
I'll tell you, you really want to watch your speed in the Port Henry area. They are really patrolling there. And it's 30 miles an hour through the town, and the state police they greet everybody by the Lake Champlain Bridge, which is 30 in there. Then it goes up to 55. And they have a new gray Ford Explorer Escape unmarked car patrolling the neighborhood, but really watch. I go through there all the time, so be careful.
Well, maybe we can follow up with the speed sensor. I think that really does work.
They do.
The speed sensor.
They really do.
If we can get one here during the summer months, that would be great.
Okay. Does anyone have a report on Twin Brooks, the road? Is that doing all right? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a report. I live on it and everything. They're maintaining it.
Pat Ellsworth's brother-in-law, Jeff, I'm not sure what his last name is,
right?
He took it over and collected money and made substantial improvements. Still could use a little more, but it's much better than it was.
Jeff what? Do you know his last name?
Right.
I don't know his
name.
Right.
Jeff
Wright.
W-R-I.
Right.
Wayne, on our road, what's the percentage of people who contribute?
22 out of 35.
22 out of 35.
I think we had 22, and I don't know out of how many.
Just a follow-up. If you want to call the state police, just call them. I'm tired of calling them. just call them up and say, could you send a car out here? And they're very cooperative about it.
Oh,
we should take time. We should.
Yeah.
And maybe we can do an association
the more
request.
The more calls they
get,
the better off it is.
That's true.
Well, it's a little bit dangerous over there. You're speaking through that section. It's dangerous for people.
Oh, it is.
And weekends. You only focus on the weekends. That
Saturday,
would be
the most Typically, the speed times are Saturday morning. It starts about 9:30, 10 o'clock. People are going places. Mm-hmm. And it's the motorcycles. We must get at least 60 to 70 motorcycles a day on Saturday and Sunday. It's just constant. And they're Quebec, a lot of Quebec out of state, and some of these guys have got these glass packs on their harness. Oh my God, you got to go out.
Twin Brooks Road is right at the end of the speed zone, and there isn't good visibility coming in and out of that road. And I think when they get to the edge of the pond and they start up the hill, they figure it's time to put the handle on. At that end, they're really
right at the curve. Right at the curve by our beach there. And then they just hammer it.
They come over the causeway pretty fast.
I've pissed a lot of them up because I'm going up the hill and I'm turning left into my driver and I'm going slow with my directional signal. And then a lot of people want to gun up the hill.
I just did 35 going through there last evening. I make a run to Plattsburgh. And I thought that was a little bit fast.
We can contact them about getting
it down to 30
and follow up with the speed sensor periodically, remind them that we're still interested. Maybe we'll do that.
I don't know if it would help, but I have thought if they had a sign coming up the hill, blind drive ahead, mm-hmm. something along that line, so they knew there's traffic going to be coming out of the road. If they don't see it, they might come around that corner coming up.
All right, we will contact the relevant agencies. Let's see. We'll do the memberships and T-shirts. Judy's got some more T-shirts left over from last year. If anybody is interested in buying them, I think they're $10 a piece, and then the other ones are what, 16?
The golf
shirts
there's
are 16.
The sizes left, they're small and medium for the T-shirts, and the golf shirts, I think it's small and extra large.
Is that extra large?
The small child? C-H.
No.
It's just small.
Small. That's a small.
The
extra large must
be
really
good.
But anyway, after the meeting, just come over if you're interested. And the other thing is if, you know, we need more, we'll jot it down and then Judy will place an order. But she said that kind of the interest is slow this year, so maybe we need a year off from it and then as they wear out.
I think we need fleece.
Fleece? Yes, after today, fleece.
About that,
well,
adding that in
a
few
people.
Yeah, but she didn't get anybody that
followed up with that. So contact Judy or leave if you want to find
I'll
them
take that. Take notes
today. Let's see, we're getting near the end. Announcements. Anyone have any announcements? Fishing report, wildlife sightings. See any interesting, anybody see any moose this year?
We have two large loons out in front of our place that are really spectacular.
Yeah.
I went online to check them out and see how long do loons live. And these are big birds. 15 to 25 years.
Do you see any babies?
Yes. There's about seven. They
no,
went by
no
this
loons.
Morning. Loons, yeah.
Yeah, they're alive.
Baby loons?
No,
yes,
mergansers. Those are mergansers.
Wasn't the merganser?
With the redhead?
Maybe the mergansers. I'm not sure.
The babies were loons, though? The babies are earlier in the year.
We saw babies in July. Was it July last year?
Yeah, not,
here, not here.
Not
here. It was
up
in a pond
south. No, they don't have. The loons only have one or two.
Oh, really? Okay.
There's a merganser with eight babies. Oh, yeah.
That's
right.
That's
they skitter across the line.
That's
much
more fun by this.
Then there's geese with gosh. No,
Any interesting
two
fish?
Pair, maybe three pair.
Angie said about the fishing tournament
was
successful. I think it was like 4 pounds.
Five pound bass,
four and a half pound northern was the biggest one. They had a good turnout. There's a lot of them on pond.
105 fishermen registered.
There's a lot.
It seemed to be that many.
No,
yeah,
it didn't seem so to
be. Really? I almost got lured a lot. We have a lot down in our.
Oh, we got mine into the hot season.
If you want to keep up with like the fishing tournament and what the Elizabethtown Fishing Game Club is doing, you know, just join. It's what $15 a year or something like that. And, you know, they send you an email for all the meetings. They have meetings once a month, and then they have their jamboree, which is in August.
Yeah, August 16th through the 18th, they're having their jamboree.
You know, they do quite a few things, and they, you know, if you want to go to, you know, a fishing game meeting, you know, it's like the first Thursday of every month. You know, this month they didn't do it because of the fair they're working down there, but they have, you know, like potluck dinners, and I don't know what else they do, and then they always send you a bunch of raffle tickets they try to get you inside.
Okay, any new business?
Just a comment on the delivery box idea.
Yeah.
On Twin Brooks, there is one that's just in 100 yards, so that, and it's not locked.
Yeah,
but I got FedEx, you know, FedEx and UPS know about it, and they deliver there.
How large is the box?
It's about like this.
As big as a chair.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. But it's big enough to hold, you know, a sizable pack.
Well, so maybe going in a little and putting it.
Yeah, well, that's the way it is. It's like 100 yards in
so
Twin Brooks, and it's not obvious.
So it's not on the one who doesn't want to, but in,
does
you know
UPS,
what I mean?
Does UPS need to be notified to pick up
the
other
I think you have to notify them anyways, you know, to say you got a package, but they know that the location, where the location is. I assume it's because in the wintertime, they don't want to drive all the way down. for some that so be around houses.
With Lower Pond, we might be able to get the Egglefield camp to camp there and put it off there.
It's not that far to Twin Brooks.
What?
It's not that far to go up to
no,
Twin Brooks.
No, it's not that far.
It's just, like I say, 100 feet in on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
Right next to a tree.
Right kind of behind a tree so that you don't even notice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They come by, I'm pretty sure they come by every day.
Well, I had to get a boat parked, and I talked to the UPS guy. I happened to be out at the vets, and he said they're here every day, and they, you know, they deliver. And they put it in there. If they don't have a small truck, they can run ahead.
All right. Well, I'll follow up with Doug. Doug was going to do that work, put it together. So I'll tell Doug about that. Okay, if there's no other new business, then we can adjourn.
Till next year.
Make a motion.
Make a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you very much.
Please get food and coffee on the way out.
And if you have membership dues, Jeff is right there to collect. I actually need to give him a check.
And Jeff, if you didn't get to see this history book, and there's minutes to carry on the coffee.
Is the environmental engineer and the liaison on our side?
Taking this a donation.
PPC, yes.
Yeah.
He's kind of the environmental engineer, but environmental engineer. And he was designated the liaison.